Hello, and welcome to the CISC podcast. In each edition of this series, you'll have the chance to meet a CISC staff member or other educational professional involved with the CISC community. We think you will find these podcasts of great value as a variety of people share their unique insights in their respective fields. Now, please enjoy this edition of the podcast as our host, Bob Kretzmer, speaks with our guest.
Kimberly Hernandez is the Director of Health Services with the Kern County Public Health Department. Last year, on July 28, 2021, we had an opportunity to visit with Kim and discuss the COVID-19 pandemic and how it was affecting Kern County. A great deal has changed since that time, and we thought it would be wise to revisit this topic and check in on Kern County again. Current information on the California Department of Public Health's website notes that in Kern County, 53.6% of the 920,651 people who are eligible for the primary vaccination series have done so. 47.1% of those eligible have received the primary vaccination series and are boosted. However, only 8.2% of those eligible have received the bivalent booster. On November 17, 2022, I had the pleasure of speaking with Kim once again. I think you will enjoy listening, and I know you will gain some useful knowledge related to the current state of affairs in regards to COVID-19, as well as the other respiratory ailments affecting our K-12 population. Kim, it is good to see you again, and I really appreciate you taking the time to visit with me today. And just to remind our audience, about a year ago, Kim Hernandez and I sat down to discuss the COVID-19 pandemic, and I thought it would be a good idea for us to revisit that issue, Kim. And I'll also just remind our viewers that You are the Director of Health Services for the Kern County Public Health Department, and I know you're quite busy, so again, we appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me today.
Okay. Kim, can you give us a little overview of how the COVID-19 pandemic is looking currently for Kern County?
Sure. You know, the timing of this is excellent timing because, unfortunately, what we are starting to see is the very beginning of our cases going back up. If you remember, we had a little bit of an increase over the summer months coming into August, and then we saw our cases going down over the last few months. And they have dropped, you know, significantly. And then what we are just starting to see is cases starting to increase. We remain in CDC's transmission level low, but what over the last 2 weeks, we've gone from having 4.6 cases per 100,000 to now 74 cases per 100,000. Our hospitalization admission and our hospitalization occupancy is still remaining low, but we are watching and seeing that transmission is occurring again at a faster pace than it was just last month. And so we can see this on our local dashboard when we look at our recent cases that had for the last few months been trending downward, 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 and we're starting to see it pick up just a little bit. So we want to remind people COVID is still out there. Transmission still can happen, and we want to remain vigilant.
Okay, well, thank you. Are there any particular concerns that the public health has as we head into winter in relationship to the virus and its spread? You talked about the recent outbreak. Are there any models that can tell us at this point what we may see a little bit later in the winter?
Yeah, I think what we have, you know, what we saw at the end of 2020, what we saw at the end of 2021 is we started to see cases increase this time of year. So we're starting to see sort of a seasonality or at least a period of time where as we go into winter respiratory season, right, it's also flu season that we start to see the transmission increase. You know, we remember just this last January, we saw the Omicron surge. We had a spike of cases in January. There was this increase of cases leading up to that. We hope to not see that this January. We hope that while we are seeing a little bit of an increase in cases, that we reinstitute or we remind ourselves of all the things we can do to reduce transmission of COVID, of flu, of all of the other respiratory illnesses that tend to circulate this time of year. And so we want people to just remember that there are steps that all of us can take to help reduce transmission in our community.
You mentioned Omicron, Kim, and so in January of last year, 2022.
Yes, January this year, yes.
We had an outbreak of the Omicron variant of the virus. Can you explain at all, has that virus changed at all or adapted as to where we sit now in November of 2022? And can you comment on that at all?
Omicron remains the predominant variant across California and the United States. You do hear of many of the sub-variants. You hear us talk about BA4, BA5. Those are all sort of sub-variants of Omicron. The large, over-encompassing virus that is still circulating is this Omicron variant. We are seeing and we still monitor some of these changes that we are noticing, and that's when they get those, you know, fancy letter names. But most of the time, you know, they are all still under this Omicron lineage, and they are still very similar. And so we expect that people who have, you know, received their bivalent booster that has the Omicron component, who've had an infection with Omicron, still have protection against the circulating virus. What we saw, you know, when Omicron first came into predominance at the end of last year, at the very beginning of this year, was that that was a larger shift from what was Delta. If you remember, Delta was the virus, you know, the predominant variant before that. But because of the differences, our bodies were not as able to recognize it, as able to fight it off as it had been for, you know, the Alpha variant, the Delta variant. Now into Omicron, we had to sort of retrain our body that says, hey, this is also COVID. This is also a bad guy that we need to fight off. And so since we are still in the same variant that has been circulating all year round, lots of people have an immune response. They have some protection to the Omicron variant.
Great. And what would you say would remain the best ways for children in our K through 12 schools to prevent contraction of the virus? What steps can parents have their children take?
Vaccination against COVID-19 remains the safest way to develop some immunity and some protection against COVID. Vaccination is still recommended for all children 6 months and up. And so all of our children in K through 12 schools are recommended to be vaccinated against COVID, just like they are recommended to receive their measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, their chickenpox vaccine, all of those age-appropriate vaccines. So that is one of the most important steps that parents can take to help protect their children as individuals. All of the other normal prevention tips that we typically talk about during flu season still apply. You know, it's important to wash your hands well and often, especially with our young children. We need to, you know, monitor that their hand washing is good, that they are using warm water, they are using soap, and not just splashing their hand under the faucet and going on the way of doing a good job hand washing. That's really important for all age groups. You know, as parents, disinfecting high-touch surfaces throughout our home or in places where our children are is really helpful to avoid, you know, that contamination from surfaces. Teaching our kids to avoid touching their eyes, nose, and mouth, you know, remains important. Again, this is hard when they're young. As they are older, they can be really good about that. But especially with young children, kind of monitoring and reminding them, you know, teaching them, you know, not to suck their thumb, not to rub their eyes, and helping them understand, you know, that that's how germs get into your body. Eating well, being active, having a healthy lifestyle are really important to your overall health. And having good overall health means your immune system is strong. That's another really important piece for our young kids to keep them overall healthy. And then, of course, being aware if you are in crowded indoor areas, you know, if you're in a big crowd and you hear a lot of coughing, maybe you want to remove yourself and your children from those situations, from those areas, so that you don't come in contact with somebody who is sick. And then, of course, avoiding others who you know are actively sick, giving them their space, giving them the support that you can without getting too close and risking being infected yourself. We also remind parents, you know, to keep your kids home when they're sick. We know this is a difficult thing for everyone to do, but this is important to reduce transmission in our school settings, in our community, that if you're sick, if you're developing symptoms, stay home, rest, get well, and then go back into school, go back into the community. Obviously, if you are sick, we always recommend you cover your cough and your sneezes, you wash your hands if you have to cough or sneeze, you know, and to practice that overall good hygiene.
You mentioned the bivalent booster, Kim. Are children 6 months old and up, are they all eligible for receiving the bivalent booster?
So the bivalent booster is authorized for children 5 and up. So it has not yet been authorized for children under the age of 5, but all children over the age of 5 are recommended to get that bivalent booster. It's a recommendation for one bivalent booster after they've completed their primary series. So even if your child has completed their primary series and they might have already gotten that monovalent booster, if that timing was appropriate for your child, they are still recommended to get a bivalent booster at least 2 months after their last dose. So there are a lot of children out there who got their primary series, may have gotten a first booster earlier in the year, but they are now recommended to also get that bivalent booster, which has that Omicron component to help make sure they stay protected, throughout the rest of this year going into next year.
What about those children who may have actually contracted the virus, Kim? Is there a period of time that they need to wait before they either get their primary booster series or the bivalent booster?
So anybody who has had a COVID infection should not get vaccinated while they're still sick. If they're still actively infectious, we don't want them in the scenario going to your healthcare facility, going to your pharmacy and getting vaccinated while you can infect other people. So we always ask people to please wait until you're feeling better, you are not infectious, and then to consider getting vaccinated. You know, having an infection does confer some short-term immunity. And so people may, as soon as they get better, say, okay, I don't want to get sick, let me go get that vaccine. People may also want to wait a few weeks, you know, up to 90 days, because that infection will protect you for a period of time. We don't encourage people to wait longer than 90 days because you sort of open yourself up to reinfection. But if, you know, they are feeling well, or they're not quite ready to get that booster dose yet, or they're, you know, start their primary series, you can wait up to 90 days after you've had a COVID-19 infection to get your next dose.
Great. And just briefly, we all seem to be using those home test kits now. I use them myself. Our family uses them. How reliable are the home test kits? Is there anything in particular we should know about those?
So the antigen tests, you know, since they have been authorized by the FDA, definitely have value. It is really helpful that when you test positive on an antigen test, you are positive, you very likely have COVID. One of the downsides with the antigen test is, of course, the user error that may occur when we are doing this at home as not a trained medical professional. Making sure you get a good sample can be difficult because, you know, nobody likes to put that swab up their nose, or if you're trying to swab a child, you know, they might be squirming. Getting good specimen collection is really important. We also know that sometimes the antigen response that we are looking for doesn't show up right away. And so we hear from many people that they started having some symptoms, they took an antigen test and it was negative. But this is why if you look closely at those antigen tests, including the take-home ones, there are instructions that particularly if you are symptomatic to repeat that test if it is negative. A positive is basically a positive, and there's no reason to think that you don't have it, especially if you are sick and you test positive. But if you are negative and you are suspicious that you might have COVID, you may want to wait a day or two and then take another test, because sometimes when the very onset of our symptoms, we haven't developed enough of that immune response for it to be picked up on an at-home test. On the other hand, if you go to a healthcare provider and they run a PCR test, that's the different type of test that can be run at healthcare facilities. That's looking, instead of for antigens, it is looking for little bits and pieces of the COVID-19 virus. It's looking for that DNA. And so a PCR test can pick up teeny tiny bits of that viral DNA. And so it often can detect faster that you have a COVID infection because it's not waiting for your body to respond to it. The downside of the PCR test is that sometimes you can detect that viral DNA long after you're done being sick and you're no longer infectious, because it may stick around. Sometimes these are just trace parts that get picked up. And so these tests always have to be taken in context of, are you sick? Have you been exposed? And how you interpret that. it's really important to always talk to your healthcare provider about your symptoms, about any home test results you might have. Especially this time of year where we're starting to see something like flu circulate, it's not impossible to have both COVID and flu. And especially with things like COVID and flu, you may be a good candidate for medication because there are treatments both for COVID and flu. And so this is why it still remains important, even if you are testing at home, you know, kind of self-diagnosing, to really communicate with your healthcare provider. Because your healthcare provider might say, hey, you're a very high-risk person for getting severe COVID illness. Let's prescribe you medication. Or if you're testing with for flu, or they think you might also have flu, they might want to test you because they might want to prescribe medication for flu. And so this is why, you know, it's really important for us to be aware of our own personal health, to take the steps to see if we can figure out what we have, especially if you're unsure, or if you do get yourself a diagnosis, really talking to your healthcare provider of what your options are to make sure that you stay healthy and you recover as soon as possible.
Now, let's say that I go to a gathering as the holidays approach, and I think that I may have been exposed to someone who was COVID positive. I don't know for sure, but I think I may have. What sort of time period are we talking about before either my symptoms may show up or I might test positive with a home antigen test?
In general, if you've had an exposure to COVID-19, we're looking and expecting to see you have symptoms or test positive in about 5 days. You know, generally, most people develop symptoms 4 to 5 days after that exposure. And so the recommendation is to get tested 5 to 7 days after your last possible exposure to see if you test positive. Obviously, those symptoms could start earlier. So if you think you have an exposure and you develop symptoms, we want you to get tested right away. If you don't have any symptoms and you're just not sure, you know, that waiting for those, you know, 5 to 7 days can help with confidence, you know, to boost your confidence that you aren't sick. Because if you're testing negative 5 to 7 days after your last exposure, it's unlikely that you're sick or developing, you know, going to develop any symptoms, because we would expect those to start happening a little bit earlier.
Sure. Another disease we've heard a lot about recently in the news is RSV. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to us a little bit about that, Kim? First of all, what is RSV and what might be the signs to look for in a child who you think may have contracted that virus?
Sure. RSV is a common respiratory virus that often circulates this time of year. We are hearing a lot about it in the news media because it started circulating a little bit earlier than we normally see it. And so we're also seeing more hospitalizations than we typically see due to RSV this time of year. And so this is really important for people to stay aware that it is out there and it is circulating. For normally healthy children over the age of 2, most RSV infections present as a minor illness, basically the common cold. That's what most people would think about when they see these symptoms. They might have a runny nose, they might have a little cough, they might just kind of feel a little bit under the weather, but for most normally healthy children, that's all they're gonna have. With RSV, it can be very dangerous for very young children, children who have immunocompromising conditions, or anything that weakens their immune system. You know, this can include, you know, children who were born prematurely, children who have chronic lung infections, or if they have a congenital heart condition, that those put them at higher risk of getting a severe infection with RSV. For those children, what might start as that runny nose and that cough might develop into shortness of breath, pneumonia, bronchitis, and become more severe. And so with RSV, we're really looking at our very young or otherwise immunocompromised children, as well as our older adults. You know, the elderly who have less robust immune systems can also get severe RSV infections. But we hear about it mostly in really small children.
Sure. Some of the symptoms you mentioned, tell me if I'm wrong, may mimic some of the symptoms similar to a COVID-19 infection. And so in some cases, is it good to test for both or talk to your doctor about both potentials?
Absolutely. You know, and we call it, you know, a lot of people call this time flu season. We also call it winter respiratory season because we see a lot of respiratory illness circulate in the wintertime. And so, you know, a lot of them have similar presentations, a fever, a cough, a sore throat, a runny nose. And so without an official diagnosis from a healthcare provider, it can be really difficult to know which one it is. You know, for a lot of people, if the symptoms are mild, they chalk it up to a cold, their immune system fights it off, they go on their way. You know, but for very small children, people who have immune compromising conditions, the elderly, it can be really important to know exactly what you have. And so this is why, for example, if you had some symptoms, you took a home test for COVID, it was negative, you still feel pretty crummy, then maybe it is time to talk to your healthcare provider and say, well, I tested negative for COVID, you know, can you check me for flu? Can you check me for RSV? Can you check me for all the other respiratory things that are going around? Because certain things have interventions, you know, things like the common cold, we can't cure the common cold, you just get better. But other things, you know, have antiviral medication, you know, in our community, you might have something like Valley fever that requires antifungal medication. If it's COVID, if it's flu, you know, that there are treatments available if you're at risk for severe illness, if you're not getting better. And so that's why it's always really important for us to continue to communicate with our healthcare provider.
And maybe we should talk about the flu for a moment. I know that it is flu season or approaching flu season. Is that a particular concern to public health this year?
I think, you know, every year we worry about flu season. Flu season continues, you know, to circulate. Flu continues to circulate every year. Flu can be deadly. And so we want people to, again, do everything they can to protect themselves from this illness. They're, you know, everybody 6 months and older is recommended to get an annual flu vaccine. And so it's not too late to get your flu shot if you haven't gotten it already. In Kern County, we generally see flu take off right around the first of the year. And we see large increases that time. That's historically what we see. We are starting to see flu circulate now. In California, most of the state of California is sort of in low transmission, but especially in the southern region, they have moved into high transmission. So we're probably not long behind because we tend to follow what we see in Southern California pretty closely a few weeks after. And so we do know flu is circulating. You can probably hear the coughs and the sniffles in your environment. We know people are getting diagnosed with flu, and that, you know, similarly with flu, you can remain infectious for up to a week after your symptoms start. And so I want people to remember, when you don't feel well, separate yourself from other people, especially vulnerable people. Those brand new babies who are just born, the elderly grandparents we really want to see during the holidays, we need to make sure we do what we can to protect them. One, we need to protect ourselves to avoid getting sick. If we get sick, we want to avoid contact with our especially vulnerable friends and family so that we don't pass them something that might just give me sniffles, might just give me a cough, but might put the brand new baby in the hospital. And so this is something where we all take personal responsibility. One, to keep ourselves well so we don't pass it to other people. If we unfortunately do get sick, because it happens to all of us, of really taking responsibility that says, you know what, I'm going to skip Thanksgiving dinner. I'm not feeling well. Love all you guys. Hope you have a wonderful time. But I'm going to stay home so that I don't get anybody else sick.
Well, thank you for that, Kim. I just thought I'd ask you, are there any other concerns that are floating around out there that might be helpful for our listeners to be aware of? We've talked about COVID, RSV, and the flu. I was just wondering if public health has any other major concerns right now.
Whenever we get into the holidays, we always talk about the potential for foodborne illness. You know, Thanksgiving is coming, other holidays are coming up. We often gather with other people. A lot of our holidays revolve around, you know, sharing meals, which is a great, wonderful time to have. But we just want to remind people about safe food handling. You know, keeping cold foods cold, keeping hot foods hot, because we don't want people sick, you know, from that Thanksgiving meal. And so that's something we always remind people about this time of year, especially things, you know, with get-togethers and potlucks and people traveling, of making sure that we handle our food safely, that we keep it safe, that we enjoy delicious meals together. But that's another important part of the holidays is, you know, being aware of respiratory illness that goes around, but also while we are eating, to make sure that our food is kept in a safe manner, that we get to consume it when it's yummy, we handle leftovers, you know, appropriately, refrigerate things, heat things up, and that's another important thing to keep in mind during the holiday season.
Sure. Well, Kim, we know you're busy. We greatly appreciate the time you've spent with us this morning. And once again, we think that the information you've shared is going to be greatly appreciated by our listeners, particularly in the CIS community. So thank you again, and I hope you have a great holiday season.
Thank you so much.
Hope you've enjoyed this edition of the CISC podcast and greatly appreciate you listening to our show. Please check the CISC property and liability website at cisc.kern.org for a complete listing of podcast topics under the property and liability tab. Until next time, stay safe as we continue with the CISC mission of schools helping schools.
Production facilities for the CISC podcast are provided by KETN, a service of the Kern County Superintendent of Schools.